Welcome to Your Right to Speak, discussions on child rights and advocacy. This is episode 9. I'm your host, Sammy.
I'm your other host, Josh.
I forgot to mention this before, but I don't know if you know, Josh, but my Italian name is Salvatore.
I did not know.
No, I know. So for now on the show, I will be introducing myself as Salvatore. That's why I'm just bringing that up.
Oh, okay.
So our listeners don't get confused.
I'll still be Josh.
Today on the show, we will be talking with Sho and Aki, who work at the Office of the Provincial Advocate for Children and Youth. Sho and Aki both work on social media and communications here at the Advocate's Office. Can you guys please introduce yourselves?
Yeah, sure. My name is Aki, Aki Chair. I am the Communications Coordinator here at the Office. I've been here for approximately 5 months.
And my name is Sho Miller. I am the Social Media Amplifier here at the Office. And I'm kind of a sub-branch of the communications.
So we're just going to dive into it like we always do. Can you gentlemen explain the importance of social media and communications when engaging children and youth, even just raising awareness about social justice issues? What's the importance behind that?
I think communications plays a massive role, especially in what the office is set up to do, which is to elevate the voices of young people. I like to think of communications as a huge medium in which that happens. I think, you know, when we're speaking, particularly in the context of social justice, you know, these aren't easy topics for a lot of young people to just sort of raise by themselves and sort of, you know, just sort of put their hand up. And I think a lot of times these young people know that they need a sort of vehicle like this office in which to raise a lot of the issues that they face. I certainly feel that it's a huge part of what we do here.
With the aspect of social media, I believe that with youth, social media is a great way to branch out to them. It's a great medium to show what current events and what the office is doing, kind of give them a glimpse of that. I think that before it would be that an office would kind of seem, it would have less of a personality, and with social media it makes it more approachable. People can keep tabs on what's going on in the office, and you feel more comfortable expressing themselves and telling their stories. It just opens up a branch of communication for them.
I think just to add on to that as well, you know, social media, I think, is almost become the sort of dominant avenue in which a lot of people are interacting with each other. You know, I think the days of the phone and the emails are still very prevalent, but I think when you think about social media, and especially young people, it's just a good sort of comfortable medium for them to be engaging in conversation with.
Yeah, like even, so one thing I found is like social media is one aspect where, like from the youth's perspective, that like there isn't a communications branch that's needed. Like youth are in control of their own voice. The youth are in control of what they post. Youth are in control of how they say things. And then, you know, the office can take that up and like that, like for example, narratives, like had the off, like we could have, for example, maybe looked on Instagram to see who was posting about disability justice and use that as a way of at getting people's narratives. So like in some aspects, social media has very much become, in fact, I'd say social media has become very political. I remember the times when Facebook used to be, maybe it's just because of my age, but when Facebook was like, you know, going, we're here for lunch. And like, now it's like Facebook is like, here's my critical engagement with this and blah, but like, but youth are doing that though. Mm-hmm. Like that's like the whole, for example, the whole sex ed curriculum thing. That was two 13-year-old girls using social media to talk about consent and the lack of engagement of consent with sex ed curriculum. Mm-hmm. 13 years old, and they're, one, thinking about that, and two, they're engaging in political discussion using social media, and they were in control of it, which I think was really important.
Yeah, I think it helps to formulate their sort of thought mm-hmm. process a little bit if that's not a topic mm-hmm. that they're comfortable just raising to people that, you know, particularly the past you might have raised it to some mm-hmm. other person, whereas that may have fallen on deaf ears. Mm-hmm. I think now you've got a sort of platform where mm-hmm. they know that they'll be heard or seen in some way, and it generates that discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely why I love social media. I think that with companies, organizations, and businesses, it used to be a lot more of a one-sided road where mm-hmm. we would say what we wanted to say, but we never got feedback. Where this now the ball is in our youth's court. Mm-hmm. We actually get to hear their opinions, and that two-way street is exactly that voice. You know, we always talk about the voices of the youth, and I think that with social media, it is giving them that voice. Their opinions matter to us, and they're always heard.
Mm-hmm. It's very much like a huge trend, like the youth are using social media as, I guess, a way to express themselves. But I'm sometimes finding that, like, issues of confidentiality come up, or people are expressing themselves on a certain issue, and they regret it later on.
I mean, I can't speak for those folks. I know that the times that I've regretted speaking on an issue is when someone has shamed me for saying something and for standing up for what I believe in. And you know, that's where you see like posts where, like, for example, last week I saw it was an image, it was a cartoon of like the Facebook symbol, so the F, and then people on a conveyor belt going through, and on the one side they're dressed as, you know, normal civilians, and on the other side they're dressed as judges. So it's essentially saying that Facebook is full of common day judging, in terms of everyone thinks they're a judge. But I'm like, that's so problematic to put that image out, because you're essentially telling people to not use social media and not use Facebook as a platform to engage in political discussion. And let's make it clear, Facebook is accessible for many folks, right? And so you're essentially taking the accessibility away. And I'm pretty sure the image was of, like, all white people too. So that kind of gave me a chuckle, because the reality is, most, in terms of privilege, the most privileged people to be able to engage in politics, you look at our parliament and white people are the most represented, right? So we flip it, and marginalized communities are using platforms like Facebook to speak out, and they're being made fun of. Like, I would say maybe that's why folks regret it, because they end up being shamed. The other thing I could think of in terms of regret is maybe someone wording things as we deem improper. But I would just say, you know, reactions to injustice shouldn't be our basis of engaging with what someone has said. So, you know, if someone is swearing, if someone is maybe not wording things how we like, and this, you know, this is kind of the whole conversation we had two episodes ago about black people always be like, we're too angry, you know. Sometimes we should be allowed to be angry. That just because I'm angry doesn't mean you should disengage from what I'm saying. I shouldn't always have to make things comfortable. And I think, again, when people regret saying the things they've said, it's because someone along the way shamed them and said, this is the way you should speak or shouldn't speak.
I think that, I mean, that's kind of the con of social media is that, I mean, sometimes when everyone has their opinion, there are the radical opinions, and that does cause friction. But I think that the one thing that people kind of forget to look at is that what we have now is amazing. It's constant dialogue. And using the office as an example, like, when we would discuss things with youth before social media, they would have to come to the office and that dialogue would only occur here. Whereas now, it could happen when I'm asleep at 10, there could still be people engaging in issues on these pages. And I think that that's the most amazing thing. And like I said, it might also be its downfall, is that some people do express things and they don't really think about it at first, and it's easy to just post when you're behind a screen. But I think that at the end of the day, it also opens up an area of communication where people can then just have, even if it's a disagreement or argument, it's still, at the end of the day, it's dialogue where people learn from it. So I think at the end of the day, it still ends up being a positive experience.
I relate this all back to, you know, who the children and youth that the office actually serves are, especially in its mandated areas. And, you know, for them, I think a lot of their social justice issues are not mainstream discussions. They don't happen very often and very regularly on the likes of Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. And I think for them, you know, what they constitute as engaging in political dialogue on their social justice issues, it sometimes requires a little bit more of I would say it needs another medium other than just social media. And I think that's why, you know, this office, and I sort of related it back to communications, it's why it's so important that their voices are elevated in other ways that aren't just quite organic to, you know, the person, you know, posting and sort of commenting on discussions themselves.
I mean, so my one critique of that was, and I was thinking about this in my head, is how youth actually find themselves devalued because they're doing it on their own. And that's not to say that you've just done that, but to say that youth always require adults, because, like, who's in communications? Adults. Because, again, communication is still a regulatory function. So we're saying that adults, and this relates back to what we were talking about the last episode, we're saying that adults need to be present to regulate and elevate the voices of youth. And one of the issues we found is that sometimes those voices can result in actually being unheard, and that they can be used for mechanisms to prove a point, but that they're not, the narratives aren't staying true to what the point of telling that narrative was, if that makes sense. So, like, and I think that's what is so great about social media, is that youth can say, I don't need an adult. This is my voice. It's going to be uninterrupted. It's going to be organic. It's going to be grassroots. And if you look at, for example, Black Lives Matters, that is like what's happening in Toronto. A lot of young black youth, they're youth in terms of education, like they're in university, but younger than what we would have seen had Black Lives Matter started 10 when this Facebook started. Okay, 15 years ago. You know, I would like to see how much political power they would have, because now everyone can share. Like, my feed is full of Black Lives Matter stuff, and people's opinions, and it's organic, and they're not having Toronto Star regulate it. They're not having other forms of communications regulate it. So I think that's the one issue, is you don't see youth in communications, which means you don't know what's important to youth. You're just assuming. Whereas if you sat down and said to youth, this is what you've said, now what's the most important key parts of what you've said, and then how can I convey that to other people? I've never had someone ask me that.
So you're saying to bring youth into the communication side of it as well?
Because why are we saying that they can't be in communications? Because maybe because they don't have a degree, but the reality is, if we're seeing youth engaged on a social media standpoint, and we're saying that there's value in their voices, then why shouldn't we be bringing youth onto that side of it?
What I think is that... I think that with the inputs that youth give, it's really raw. It's very raw. It's very real. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to, like, legislation and stuff, it has to be filtered and refined. And you would make a point where it's about support and it's not about stealing a spotlight or overshadowing. Mm-hmm. And that's why it can't be censoring. It has to. And that's why also this is a new collaboration with communications and social media that Aki and I have started together, and it's on our own initiative because we've established that we can't have one without the other. We need the voice of the youth, but it also has to be presented to stakeholders. They do have an importance and a support role, and you are correct to say that, but you can't have one without the other, and that's why with our collaboration, it becomes, we can see both sides, and then we can also then start to refine it in a way where it doesn't get overpowered by the stakeholders, but it also doesn't get, it isn't too raw, because it does, you know, like you were saying, without the censorship of social media, which is great, things happen and things are said that you have to kind of take with a grain of salt, because it can be emotional and people do speak without really thinking about it. It's easy to type something up and press send and then you're kind of done with it, right? So it is that process that now it becomes great. It used to be kind of chaotic because it came from two separate worlds and there was that divide. And with saying with Black Lives Matter and the youth's voice is so powerful, mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. And I think that's also why we need to use it as a tool. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why, that is why we have social media here. It's because Office understands that, you know. They understand that first and foremost, we need the voice of the youth or we don't have an office here. Mm-hmm. That is extremely important to us. But it is also, the office is a support structure for, it's kind of a medium for it, for kids to be able to, for youth to be able to convey these messages and ask for change and demand things, really. Yeah.
Because I think when you look at social media, and obviously Black Lives Matter is a great example of something that's certainly been facilitated by youth and achieved by youth, and you know you and I'm sure you'll continue to follow the progress of just where this takes it. But you know the type of grassroots movements that can occur that way, especially with social media, to have such a focused movement with so many people, you know, with their inputs and their contributions, I think that's one thing that you know, strategy wise, that might not be cohesive, you know, through social media. I mean, you've got the great inputs and the opinions there. Now, how do you make that into a sort of a consolidated strategy?
I think that's one of the things that Black Lives Matter is trying to avoid, because I think Black Lives are sick and tired of being told we need one specific strategy, because we're saying that Black lives are diverse, Black lives are gay, Black lives are lesbian, Black lives are disabled, Black lives are mad, and you know, I think that is the big, that has been the big, because like, you know, to take another social movement, feminism, like they had one specific strategy, then they left black women out, so then black feminism started, but then, you know, there was black lesbians that were left out. So there's always been this contention of we have to have a specific strategy. And I think someone said that this was the issue with the whole 99%. What was 99 versus 1%, where they took over Queen's Park, that they said that there was too many voices going on. But what that was a real display of the fact that it was a multifaceted issue, and that if you try to focus on set issues, you are inherently excluding people. And so I'd say that is exactly what Black Lives is avoiding. That Black Lives Matter movement is trying their best, so whether they succeed or not, we'll see, but they're trying to allow all black lives to be encompassed in that movement. And I'd say our understanding of having to create a strategy is a white understanding that is coming from the government, who is mostly white, saying that we need specific strategy. So that's a problem.
And I think that works for Black Lives Matter, because it is so multifaceted, that you've got all these people with different opinions, and that almost works for its movement. But for feminism, for example, that might not work. And I think, you know, trying to come up with a united front that spawns straight out of social media can, I think, for a lot of movements be problematic, but for other movements, not so.
Well, I mean, feminism didn't start with, well, and not and I mean, you know, and it's always questionable, because, like, for example, for youth, like, so this was one of our discussions, is that, like, youth, we just see them as youth. We don't see youth as LGBT youth unless we want to research them. We don't see youth as black youth. And so it becomes this problem, again, and this was a big discussion that we had last episode, is that youth are, I would say, the only marginalized, because they are a marginalized group, to never come together as a collective as youth, if that makes sense. We have yet to do that, and even on a social media standpoint, youth have not said we want voting rights. Youth have not said that we want control of our own education. Youth have not said that we are sick and tired of economic marginalization. And you know, youth have not said that they're sick and tired of being seen as sexless objects. So in all of these aspects, social media could be one, and actually I'm thinking, it baffles me that social media has yet to be that medium where youth can come together as a youth collective. And it might be the fact that it's just, if with youth, there's like, it's so multifaceted that maybe there wouldn't be much of an agreement. But I think there would be. I think there would be some points of discussion where youth could come together and be like, yeah, we're sick and tired of that. Yeah, we're sick and tired of that.
I think that when you were talking about like the strategies and how you were saying that, you know, you think it's the, and you believe it's the white government that's giving the strategies. And I think that it's, I think that when I think strategy, it's less about, on their agenda, is more, for me, saying like maybe they should strategize, more organizational, where it's like you should be able to kind of round together all your information and then organize in a way where it does appeal to whoever you're trying to target. And I think that's part of just playing a game, right? And it is unfortunate that it has to be that way, but as of right now, you have to kind of play to your strengths and weaknesses. And when you kind of can collaborate and organize, and I think that right now, that's the problem with social media, is that it has less organization, and that kind of is its downfall as well, because thoughts are kind of just sprayed across and people have different opinions, but there's no real, it's hard to kind of have a collective agreement on something because of this opinion base. And it's so free, which is great, but it's hard to kind of say, let's just have, like, let's just organize it in a certain way. And I think that's why it has to be taken and it has to be analyzed. It has to be, and that's what I do too, is that I look at how other people, even not just youth, but adults react to social media, things that we post, and you kind of analyze it from there, because you want to try and gear it towards the theme of things. I could post something today and it doesn't get that much hype, not that much interest. But if I waited 2 weeks, it might have a lot of interest. It's so fast changing, and it's about strategizing that way. It's about picking and choosing your battles and picking times and organizing it correctly, right?
I was just going to say that I think it is important to have that communication, social media, and strategy all linked together, because sometimes there is stuff that's mentioned on social media that kind of just dwindles away. Mm-hmm. And those issues that are important don't get often talked about. One of the reasons why I want to start this podcast was to talk about issues that no one else is talking about, yeah. Right? So I think sometimes it is important, it's a very general statement to make, but it is important to have like all those three links together. But again, it does depend on the community. It does depend what issue we're talking about.
Yeah. But I mean, I still don't fully agree with that, because like, I wouldn't say, in fact, I'd say social media has brought organization, because like because of social media, people are able to understand their experience as not individual, but as collective, and then they can come together as collective. Mm. And, you know, for example, I was talking to someone and they had said that years ago they would not have known what trans was. There would have been zero access to understanding trans identity and understanding their own experience. They just understood their experience as different. But with social media, when we start to understand ourselves as different or are made to feel different, and we start to voice those opinions or see other people voice those opinions, social media allows collective to come together. And I think in terms, again, like the disorganization that we're seeing is because we have been taught that we need to organize in a particular way. And I think you have to admit that because you've been educated in a specific way. And when I speak of a white government, I don't mean like just white skin. I'm speaking to a particular system that privileges a certain type of education and understanding of, for example, organization.
Right.
So that being said, when Black Lives Matter organizes this way, and over here you might have someone saying that's not an organization, and this group is actually being like, well, this is working for us, this is how we want to organize. And if the government is not engaging with that, that means that the government is not willing to disengage from maintaining a white lens of organization being such. And so that's why, like, no, I agree that, you know, having a communications department, having regulatory people there to help filter and facilitate conversation, absolutely, I think those departments are important. And like you, like you've all pointed out, like for youth specifically, we've been told that they don't get to have a voice. But I think it's like a fine line of, but when they're needed. So for example, Black Lives Matters, they've pretty much been able to do it on their own. Arguably, there are probably folks with communications degrees, and arguably there are people that are well articulated, because most of them are in, from what my understanding of looking at the movement and who has been protesting, at least who has been more visible in media, is educated folks. So they're able to engage me, and that's the thing, they're educated, so they're able to engage at this level that the government wants them to. But then, for example, then you have an issue of class. So what Black lives in terms of class are being excluded? And so that's why, like, I don't fully agree that there's a disorganization. I'd say there is an organization that's just not your understanding of what organizing is, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, yeah. I lost my train of thought. That's just great. So, but would you say that, Josh, like, those issues and, like, that type of organization are for issues that have been around for a bit now? Like, I'm just trying to think of, like, people talking on Facebook or making some sort of comment or something and bringing up a new issue and it just dies. Like, you know, like, no one cares and,
I mean,
you know what I'm kind of getting at?
I mean, I think folks bring things up all the time and they fall. I don't want that. No, that's bad to say. I think people say things and other people don't listen because they don't want to listen, or maybe because they don't agree with it, or maybe because if they have to listen, it means they have to acknowledge that they're. Like, for example, if I was to say that the media is completely racist and that, you know, with a general swoop, there are people who are going to disagree with me, there are people who are going to have different opinions, but there are also going to be people who don't want to engage with what I say because that means they have to admit that the media is privileged towards them. So I would say that, yeah, I think things get posted all the time, and it's kind of like what they call a policy window. Unless it's a hot topic, some things get left out, but I would say that I don't want to say that there's no new ideas, but for example, Black Lives Matters, we know that these discussions were happening a very long time ago, and that's why, you know, people are still saying, well, I thought this was over with because of this, but like, nah, it's clearly not over with. And same thing with like the LGBTQ community. People are like, but we've had gay marriage. I'm like, for like not even a decade, just over a decade. And like, that doesn't eliminate homophobia, right? So a lot of these ideas aren't new. What happens is, for example, governments, services make steps to make people think that those issues have been addressed. So for example, Kathleen Wynne has said, I'm gonna have a discussion with you, right? With Black Lives Matters. Now let's see the result. Is anti-black racism going to go away? Because for example, Kathleen Wynne didn't even wanna say anti-black racism. Like she just said racism and they corrected her and said anti-black racism, but she didn't correct herself after being corrected. Right, and the way you speak about things is the way you think about things. And I would just, what was it? So Cindy Blackstock, she wrote an amazing article called Moral Courage, that sometimes you have to do things in spite of being afraid of the repercussions. So whether that's in your workplace, standing up against something that's discriminatory and you possibly losing your job, or whether it's on Facebook and you make a post that only gets 2 likes, because guess what? 2 people liked it. Mm-hmm. And if no one liked it, so what? You know that someone saw it, right? Yeah. So I think it's just the moral courage of doing things in spite of our fears of what have you.
I just want to change the focus a little bit. Bringing it back to communications and social media. Well, we're talking about that anyways, but do you find that for both of you, it's hard to keep up with like the current trends of like new social media? Like how does that, like you constantly thinking of new ways on how to reach like young people or be in the world of a young person? Right, because like I mean, Twitter just you know came out a couple of years ago, right after Facebook, right, and that's kind of gone to shits now. Excuse my language. that was the first time I swore on here. And then there's like Instagram. So you guys finding it hard to always like keep up with like the new trends? Like, how do you work with that?
Well, I mean, you're right to say that like social media is so fast paced that, and like I said before, I could post something and it have a completely different result next week, 2 weeks from now. It makes it a little difficult, but I think that the things that usually do stay are like, there is a pretty like, there's templates that do stick, and it's about visual, being visually appealing. And I think that that's kind of what my new focus is on, is that when your newsfeed, you've pressed refresh and you have 50 new things on there, you want everything to catch someone's eye. The content itself might not be as trendy, but it's about having someone read that is the most important. Someone getting the person there is what my job is about. And that's what it does with keeping up with trends. I could post videos about Dan Daniel and get people's attention that way. but overall, it's about showing things that are visually really appealing and catching that eye. That's all I really, that's never going to change in social media. It's that we have a shorter attention span when we're consuming social media, and we like shiny things. We like things that are very visually appealing, and I think that that's kind of the stepping stone. Our content, especially with The Office, like we do have content that is, it's relatively the same, it stays the same. We have themes and we kind of stick by them, right? There is room for change, but for the most part, like I said, it's about keeping it fresh enough and changing things up in a way where it's, you know, it's not boring. You don't see the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, yesterday on CTV, actually, quite interestingly, I saw this segment about, and they were talking about, you know, linguistic lexicon and, you know, words like swag and they and, you know, on sleek and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Words that I would have been completely unfamiliar with, if not for trying to sort of stay on social media, trying to engage in these conversations, even just, you know, having young people here and just listening.
Just listening. What did you just say?
Exactly.
That's not in Oxford.
Exactly. But that's where I think, you know, part of like lived experience is so important. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to sort of get in where they are, if you will, and really understand sort of what formats they're communicating on, what they're talking about, you know, who they're talking to. You're right in that it, you know, within the four walls, it can sometimes feel like, you know, a little sheltered and you're not sort of on the ground that way. Mm-hmm. But I think that's why, you know, it's not just with people, you know, within here, like with Joe, but outside of it as well, you know, staying very connected to the young people. And I don't just say that, oh, you know, because our office is set up that way, we do that, but it's actually important, or else our office wouldn't bare its teeth, if that makes sense.
So we just have to wrap up, because it's been a great 30 minutes. Does anyone have any last words before we close?
No, thank you for having us.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you for coming.
So I think it's a good way to end with what Aki was saying. Thank you, Sho and Aki, for coming in today to talk with me and Josh. Your right to speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. If you are a child or youth that would like to be on the show, or if you have an idea of a topic that me and Josh should be talking about, please email us at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast.
Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher.
Visit us online at cycpodcast.org.